From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180. Queued up by Edley's Barbecue with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Out of the gates for the second half of the show. Today's show flying by alongside Paul Kuharski. I'm Jonathan Hutton. Chad Withrow returns next week on his furlough week right now. David Reed is the chairman of the board making the show happen for us in Nashville. We have Greg Cosell, who will join us in about 15 minutes. A lot to get to today with Greg, who will assess the 2019 seasons of Rashawn Evans and Jeffrey Simmons. Really looking forward to our discussion and our chats with him as he evaluates players individually off of the Titans roster from last year. If you're interested in finding the podcast page where we have Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown and Corey Davis detailed, you can find that online, midday180.com or wherever you download your podcasts. Let's kick off the hour, though, Paul, with some news and notes from last night's chat that you had for PaulKuharski.com with John Robinson, the Titans general manager. And let's start with Jadeveon Clowney. What were some of the takeaways from what Robinson had to say about the free agent?
Yeah, so he said, there was a window when Nashville went into the right phase where under NFL regulations, rookies were allowed to come to town and meet team doctors all, outside of the team's facility. So I presume at St. Thomas, right? And those guys had physicals, and that's why we've seen agreed to terms with Murchison, with Cole McDonald, with Chris Jackson. And I presume Wilson, Fulton, and Evans were also in, though we haven't seen contracts yet for those guys. But that did not allow for Jadeveon Clowney or another guy that he mentioned and said the Titans could be interested in, who's also coming off an injury, Steven Gostkowski, the fifth best percentage kicker in the history of the NFL, who's coming off a hip injury. And would need to check out physically, just like Clowney, who's coming off a core injury. So when I asked Robinson what his current picture of Clowney's health is, he said what I've seen on Twitter, the same thing we've seen on Twitter, that him rushing off the edge and hitting that bag, Robinson said. So that window is still not there for them, and he made it clear that, that they're not going to be in on him and in position to offer him a contract until they get to check him out themselves. And they're not cleared to do so at this time. And so that's what's holding them back. He did allow himself to hypothetically imagine Clowney on that multiple defensive front that, that Mike Vrabel talked about from the very first day, his introductory press conference, as a moving chess piece, along with a lot of other guys he talked about on the front. And he talked, I don't want to say longingly, because I don't want to set it up that, like, if he doesn't show up, they're going to be crestfallen. But he certainly talked about it like, hey, it sure would be great to add this piece to our chessboard up front. And he did talk about, that it's fair to talk about Landry and Beasley both being outside rushers, very much, very similar, who need to develop inside moves, and the Titans needing to rush better inside. He talked about the Kansas City game, which he's watched four or five times. Said he's also watched the regular season Kansas City game. but he said the pass rush in that Kansas City game, The big thing that was missing was, and he said, he talked about how hard it is to rush Mahomes, but he said the thing that really hurt them was the inside rush that didn't show up against Kansas City, which rang a bell with me that, maybe that was part of the end of Jarrell Casey for the Titans. Just an interesting side thought I had there.
Well, the other thing that comes to mind in the Kansas City win that they had versus – the loss in the AFC Championship game. 2 points. First, they created some turnovers in that game. They got down 10 points and then clawed their way back a couple of times in that game because of turnovers. We'll talk about one of them. Rashawn Evans had a big play and returned it for a touchdown against Kansas City. They had defensive points against the best offense in the league, other than Baltimore. Second, Kansas City's defense helped win that game in the AFC Championship game against Derrick Henry. They had a great game plan for the Titans' rushing attack. That was unstoppable throughout their playoff run, and Kansas City found a way to stop them.
Yeah, absolutely true. I mean, their defense was a different animal. And we had said right from the start when they changed defensive coordinators that Kansas City's defense was going to be a work in progress. I foolishly predicted that Kansas City was going to take a step back last year after changing not just coordinators, but defensive look. And it did take them some time, but not as much time as I expected.
And they lost some players in free agency. You know, they traded for Frank Clark. He made a difference. But we remember that chatter before the AFC Championship game with Frank Clark and Derrick Henry and some of the trash talk there coming from Kansas City side. You know, I look at an addition of a Jadeveon Clowney. It's not going to be I don't expect him to be like the double-digit sack performer on the contract. And if he was going to come in and do that, he'd already be on a roster right now because he'd be making the money that he wants to make. But I look at him as what he could do for a Harold Landry, for the Vic Beasley. Landry led the team in sacks last year with what, nine? If Cameron Wake stays healthy, what does that do for Landry? Because we've heard, the discussion of the Titans assistant coaches saying, less is more with him. He kind of wore out towards the end of the year. We need to make sure that
Shane
we're monitoring.
Said that for sure.
Yeah, that factored in when Cam Wake went down. That meant Landry was playing a lot more and needing to produce more in the rush.
See, I don't get that Cam Wake would have solved that problem, though, because Cam Wake, when he was healthy, was playing only third down.
I know.
So how does that take anything off Harold Landry's plate? I mean, he takes third downs off Harold Landry's plate, but you want Harold Landry playing on third down.
Yeah, but
what you need is somebody to take first and second down off Harold Landry's plate. So that's more on Reggie Gilbert, who's not a dynamic player, but is going to do the kind of things you want an outside linebacker to do on first and second. Fact of the matter is, you don't want run down linebackers anymore. You want well-rounded linebackers on every down. You need pass rushing linebackers on every down. I understand there's a place for Reggie Gilbert, but it's a very limited place, right? You need your outside linebacker to rush the passer unless you're looking at second and one, second and two. Second and two is a good down for Reggie Gilbert, right?
Just from a rotational standpoint, though.
Second and two, right?
The numbers, I mean, they went through a number of players. I mean, Finch was getting hurt at points during that year, and then they eventually moved on from him.
He was a starter.
Roberson ends up flashing towards the end of the season. So. Yeah.
I'm excited about Roberson, and you'd like for them not to have much opportunity to give Roberson, frankly, if everybody's healthy. If you've got Landry, Beasley, Correa, just on that, there shouldn't be much room for Roberson. He would be fourth. If Clowney comes in, he's fifth.
And then the options that you have with Clowney, with Simmons, Simmons now can play the three, can play the zero. We're getting into this with Greg. Five technique if you need him to. I'm excited to see what Greg has to say about Simmons going into year two and, by all accounts, back to 100% healthy after he's been rehabbing with the Titans this offseason. We'll get into that with Greg coming up. And we'll start when we come back with Rashawn Evans. He is very high on Rashawn Evans. We'll find out why. Greg Cosell next, right here on the 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. It's 104.5 The Zone. Greg Cosell joins us on 104.5 The Zone alongside Paul Kuharski. I'm Jonathan Hutton, David Reed, the chairman of the board for this show each and every day. The very best at what he does. same can be said for Greg Cosell. He's now been with us going on 7 years now. He's been with NFL Films for over 40 years, and it's film analysis you're simply not going to find anywhere else. We've been detailing players from the 2019 Titans season, and we've had discussions on Ryan Tannehill, A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, and today we turn to the Titans defense. Greg, hope you're doing well.
Jonathan, I'm doing great. How are you?
We are excellent. Always enjoy the opportunity to talk some ball with you, X's and O's, and what you've watched during this time as you continue, I know, to work from home as much as possible. You never want to stop watching the tape, and that is what makes you so great. You were watching a lot of Titans film recently, and you said, hey, make note of this. Let's discuss Rashawn Evans, because you are very high on the Titans linebacker as he continues to progress throughout his young career.
Yeah, well, it goes back to when they drafted him, and I remember we spoke when they drafted him, and I really liked him as a prospect coming out of Alabama. And you could just see the athletic movement, the sudden movement. He's a twitchy kid. He played multiple positions at Alabama. And you never know when a player gets drafted how a team will specifically use him. But, you know, as you look to his second season, this past 2019 season, you could see that Mike Vrabel and Dean Pease clearly felt that he could play multiple roles. And I think that that was really critical. It played to what he is. A lot of people may not know that I believe he went to Alabama as an edge pass rusher and then moved to linebacker, but that edge pass rush ability is something that, you know, he didn't lose, and that was used to a good advantage by the Titans in a lot of their schemes. And, you know, people might not be aware of this, but of their front seven players, he played the highest percentage of defensive snaps this year. So he's clearly a player they feel has meaningful value in all their packages.
As far as the progressions year to year from what you've seen, where to train his eyes is something that Coach Mack speaks on Titans Radio on game days. Look and react. It's eyes before feet at that position. How is he at interpreting what he's looking at and then making that where he's ending up and making a big play on Sundays?
Yeah, and I think that's one area that he significantly improved, particularly when he's playing in the base defense. And now in the base defense, they had a couple of different base defenses. They played with what we call a 3-4 front, and he was essentially the strong side stacked linebacker in the 3-4 front, meaning that he lined up to the side of the offensive tight end. And then they also played 4-3, what we call over fronts, where it was shifted to the tight end side, and he was essentially the middle linebacker in those fronts. And so when he played in base, where he really improved was his play recognition. And that's what Coach Mack is referring to, playing with your eyes. Whether you're reading an offensive lineman, whether you're reading through to the back, something triggers in your brain, and you react. And you want to react as quickly as possible to what you see. And I thought his play recognition clearly improved this year, and the result of that was his quickness, his athleticism, his twitch really then started to show up in the run game. He became a really aggressive downhill player in the run game.
I am sure I am oversimplifying this, but I came to feel at times last year like, and maybe this just is because of their skill sets, that Evans was the forward-moving inside linebacker, and that Jayon Brown was the backwards moving inside linebacker. Am I over pigeonholing there based on maybe what I saw at their best moments of their best strengths?
Yeah, and again, PK, I don't know how they're coached, so that's the one thing I don't know. But when it was clearly a run down, let's say, and the offense was in base personnel, and you're sort of anticipating run, Evans was clearly an aggressive downhill player. I wouldn't say Jayon Brown's not an aggressive player, so that's why I don't want to say I don't know how they're coached. But Evans is, he was one of those guys that when he saw it, he hit it. And he had the quickness and the twitch to avoid blocks in the box without losing his gap integrity, and that's critical. There are a lot of guys in the NFL, they get to the league, and they try to avoid blocks, and then they lose their gap, and that's when you give up big runs. Evans is so athletic and so quick that he could at times avoid the offensive lineman who was trying to block him without losing his gap assignment and still be in position to make a play or allow someone else to make the play.
Let's go a bit deeper on the position requirements for him, because you mentioned he's a pass rusher. He's been used as that at Alabama. But now he's got to dissect the play and the block as quickly as a defensive lineman, but also have the special awareness of a player in the secondary. And it seems as though you're saying he definitely possesses those traits.
Well, as I said, he played multiple positions. So he was a stacked linebacker in their base, in their nickel, with five defensive backs on the field. He was essentially the Mike linebacker. And in that role, he did a number of different things depending on the coverage. In zone, he was predominantly an underneath zone defender. At times when they played what we call cover two, which is a zone concept, he would be the defender that would sort of run the middle seam. So he played multiple positions, underneath positions, in their zone coverage concepts. Now, in dime, with six defensive backs on the field, he was often featured as a pass rusher. Not always, but he was often featured as a pass rusher, and he would line up in different spots on the defensive front, including edge rusher. What they like to use him as well, because he was such a twitchy and flexible athlete, was when they did their stunts, he would be what we call the looper. He would be the guy who loops around, because a stunt always has a picker and a looper, and the picker, you know, just basically runs at an offensive lineman, and then the looper, you know, loops around. And he'd be the looper more often than not when they did their stunt games.
Greg Cosell with us. Greg, in past weeks, we've asked you about Tannehill and A.J. Brown and Corey Davis and how you would like to see them build off of the foundation that is there within the individual player. I'll ask the same from Rashawn Evans from this stance. Do you think that next jump in skill set would be zone coverage awareness? He wasn't asked to do that a lot. Anticipate the routes and the concepts, assignments, and dropping back a bit different than maybe what he was asked to do in college.
It's, you know, it's really funny that you asked me that, because I think there's two things that I think he still needs to improve. And again, then it comes down to how a guy is deployed, and we'll see, you know, obviously with Dean Pease gone, we'll see how Mike Vrabel, you know, chooses to do this going forward. But I thought there were two things that stood out to me where Rashawn Evans needs to improve, and I'm not surprised by it, because he's essentially a downhill player and a pass rusher. I think he needs to improve his transition from run defender to pass coverage when it's play action. He seemed a little tentative at times in his reaction and transition, and I think that's something he needs to improve. The second thing, I think, to play off exactly what you just said, Jonathan, I think he needs to develop a better feel for routes and route concepts as an underneath defender in zone coverage, because there were times I felt like he just dropped without a sense of routes. And the days of just dropping to a spot in the NFL, they don't really exist anymore. You need to drop with awareness of route concepts and route combinations and match up when players come in your area. You don't just drop to a landmark the way it was years and years ago and stand there. So I think those are two areas in which he needs to improve, but that can come with experience as well, if he's deployed that way.
And that deployment comes, what, game plan specific. Sometimes he's the second man through. Where the goal is to create the one-on-ones and confuse the blocking schemes. And let's specifically talk of Evans, but now let's just focus on the front seven. How creative can they get? How versatile are they player to player in how they've built this front seven over the last 3 or 4 years?
Well, they're pretty versatile. And again, now it also comes down to scheming, because we know what Dean Pease did because he did it. We don't know exactly what will happen going forward. Dean Pease, and it's funny, I've spent a lot of time over the last 3-4 weeks simply because coaches are home. When I watch tape, I have an opportunity to talk to, you know, coaching friends of mine. And, you know, Dean Pease, his name always comes up as someone who is so good with his disguise and his use of multiple front looks. And I think that that plays to the talent that the Titans have. Certainly plays to Evans. It certainly plays somewhat to Jeffrey Simmons, another player I think can become a real stud on this defense. I think that Evans is a player that fits that multiple front look and that multiple usage look. The game is mostly played now with your sub-defense, whether it's nickel or dime. And we know that the Titans almost always play dime, six defensive backs on third down, unless it was third and short. So the game is played with your sub-packages now. And Evans, to me, is your classic sub-package player because he's such an athletic specimen who can do a number of things. We tend to think of sub-package players being great when they're DBs, like a Tyrann Mathieu. But I think you can be great as a sort of linebacker-type sub-package player as well.
Greg Cosell with us on 104.5 The Zone.
Well, let's flip to Jeffrey Simmons. When he came back, it was earlier than a lot of people expected. And that first game against the Chargers, he was very impactful. After that, it seemed he flashed at times, and the plays that he made were really notable. But then he could go quiet for a time. Before we get into kind of what we expect from him, give us the 30,000-foot view of what he did last year.
Yeah, I think that you start with what his traits, just like I started with Evans. You're dealing with a guy that's very powerful, has really strong hands, uses them violently. He's not twitchy in the way that, let's say, Aaron Donald is twitchy, but he's a good athlete for an interior lineman. Now, he was a guy that played multiple positions as well, depending on the front. The first snap he played, I remember like it was yesterday, that first snap he played, he was a three-technique defensive tackle, and he actually slanted inside, and he just ate up the offensive center with his hand usage, his strong, powerful hands. He just ate up the Chargers' offensive center. Now, he showed, as you said, PK, he showed flashes. When all was said and done, he had some games where he played a lot of snaps, and he had some games where he played fewer snaps. My guess is, and we have no idea because of this offseason, but my guess is he'll be a foundation piece now going forward and will play significantly more snaps on a weekly basis. I don't know if he'll ever be, a big, big-time pass rusher as far as, an Aaron Donald type. Those guys are rare, but I think he can be a very good interior pass rusher and a strong run defender because of his strength. There's an awful lot to like about Jeffrey Simmons. I told you when, that was the draft when I was down with you guys in Nashville, and I told you when they drafted him, I thought he was a top five, top six player in the entire draft, and the only reason he fell to the Titans was because he was coming off an injury, and my guess is John Robinson agreed.
And he would have been in the same class this year, right? He's a top-tier talent in this past year's draft, too, if we're just comparing what they could have waited on, for instance.
To me, he's just a big-time talent. He's built really well. He's athletic. He's powerful. I mean, I remember, and you know this because you guys, talk to Coach Mack all the time, and Coach Mack and I have discussed him, Jeffrey Simmons, and, the thing that immediately stands out, and I could see it gets a defensive coach like Coach Mack excited, is just the violence with which he uses his hands. And I think that that's one of his best traits, and that's a trait that will really serve him well as he continues his career. I mean, he's only going into his second season.
That shock and shed ability, is that a trait that is extremely difficult to find in a player that's coming out of college, going to the league? Is that something that develops with the specific coaching at the NFL level from your experience?
Well, I think the power, different people have different beliefs in that. I remember Bill Walsh always talking about being explosive off the ball. If you're first off the ball, you tend to be more explosive. As far as the actual strength in a player's hands, arms, can you make a guy stronger? Sure you can. You can't make a guy more athletic usually, but you can make a guy stronger. but just the way he uses his hands, some things are just innate, I think, at any position. And he just has a great, great feel for how to use his hands and maximize his strength. You know, that stands out. I mean, that stood out to me watching his tape in college, and it clearly stood out to Coach Mack, because that was one of the first things he talked about, as you guys remember, when he would speak about Jeffrey Simmons.
We talk about maximizing his strength. He looks to be stronger if you're just looking at before and after pictures. He had the quote-unquote advantage based on qualifying to be one of the guys in the weight room with the trainers during the COVID lockout, if you will, because he's still recovering from his ACL, technically, to be with the Titans medical people and training staff. He's reshaped that body. You imagine working with that strength when he's transformed to what he looked like last year, it can be even more.
And the thing about him, too, is he's a big man. And when I say big man, I don't mean in terms of weight. I mean, he's close to 6'4". I mean, we're not talking about a 6'1 defensive tackle. He's a long guy for an offensive tackle. So to me, and this is why I loved him so much coming out, I thought he showed pretty much every trait. Like I said, you wouldn't call him twitchy like an Aaron Donald, but there's not 20 Aaron Donalds. There's one Aaron Donald. But I think Simmons, and I know he ended up last year, I think, with only 2 sacks, and I think one of them came in that first game against the Chargers. And again, very often defensive tackles and sacks are a real sketchy statistic. You know, people look at that number and go, oh, he didn't have a great year. He only had 6 sacks. I don't think Simmons, the measure of his worth and value to me, will not necessarily be in his statistics. I think he's a force to be reckoned with kind of player, and he'll play multiple spots along that front, which makes him valuable in and of himself just for that reason. So I think that, you know, when you look at Evans and what he can bring, when you look at Simmons, what he can bring, I think they have two guys who are really high-level front seven players.
How different is he? People here are very used to seeing Jarrell Casey as the central piece of that line. Prepare them for the difference now for Simmons to be the central piece of that line in terms of what they're going to see on a regular basis. Obviously a different kind of shaped guy, because Casey wasn't your conventional guy. But in terms of what to prepare to see on a week-to-week basis as compared to Casey?
They're different players, PK. You know, Casey's kind of a freakish in the sense that he had that sort of short, stout build and looked heavy, but had incredibly light, quick feet. I mean, he was somewhat twitchy for a man built like that. Whereas Simmons is not built like that and is not twitchy in that sense. He's not a sudden athlete. So Simmons and Casey are different players. I don't think you would, just my personal opinion, I don't think you would see Simmons as a stand-up defensive end the way they used Casey this past year. You know, out it literally is a wide nine stand-up defensive end. My guess is you won't see Simmons in that role because I'm not sure that he can you know, he can actually fill that role, but they're totally different players, and Simmons can be dominant inside. Casey was kind of a versatile, dominant kind of player who could be used really in different ways.
I'll try to compare him to a former Titan here, not named Jarrell Casey. Simmons can play the three. He can play the shade, the zero, the five. How much does he remind you of Albert Haynesworth?
I guess, you know, again, that comparison probably has some validity. You know, Haynesworth, boy, you know, it's a shame with what happened with his career because that guy had really incredible talent. I guess you could say that they're somewhat similar. I'm kind of struggling because I don't remember Haynesworth specifically, you know, and I hate to just talk in generalities, but I think, you know, Haynesworth was a big, big man too. He was probably 6'5"-ish. Probably weighed 315, 320. Simmons is around 6'4". He's probably, what, 310, 315 now? So size-wise, they're somewhat similar. I think, you know, there's probably a comparison to be made.
Let's get into some real X's and O's here with the T-block that Simmons will face and the masterclass now that's taking place within an offseason, within a film room, whether that if he's sitting down with you or one of his assistant coaches, the closer to the ball, the quicker that the player's diagnostic skill set needs to be. And he's got to learn that center guard triangle and how teams are going to plan for him with the guard center pull. You know, he's learning that on the move last year, and he was coming off of an ACL injury. And now he has the chance to come back 100% healthy and to get inside of that film for a full offseason. I'm intrigued to see what he's learned and how he can now take that to the gridiron.
Yeah, and much depends, too, on where you line up in a particular front. And we saw last year he lined up in different spots, which is a good sign. It means they feel comfortable lining him up in different spots because obviously things change depending on where you line up and the kind of blocks that you might get. And, you know, you need to be aware of that based on what the formation is with the offense. I mean, I remember, you know, speaking to defensive linemen and linebackers, and, you know, they always talk about the splits by the offensive line. They talk about whether they're on the strong side or the weak side. They talk about the back, if it's an eye back, where he's lined up. They talk about if it's an offset back, where he's lined up. There's all kinds of things that you need to be aware of, and all these things just click automatically because you're not going to give a guy 20 things that he has to think about on each play. You give him functional knowledge. You know, that's the term that a lot of coaches use, functional knowledge, you know, on a given play based on your defensive play call. And players tend to become better at that as they play more. They find out what they really need to know and the things that are not as important to them, because you can't overload a guy's brain because then he can't play.
Excited to see both Evans and Simmons return to play this upcoming season. Greg, thank you as always. We always learn something every week whenever you join us, and we will be continuing to follow you on Twitter at Greg Cosell, and we look forward to next week.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Greg Cosell with us.
The best.
Right here on the Zone. Absolutely the best. Coming up, what is the latest with the Monday Night Football broadcast crew? We'll tell you. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Primary complaint is coming up in 30 minutes. Reed and PK are battling to see who goes last in our order here of primary complaints.
Oh, no. I think Reed. Well, the only reason that I would need to go last is because there's an extra element to my thing, not right. Because I have a superior content. So I
but
would
yours
only
may
ask
require more discussion.
Yes. That's the only reason. So I would ask Reed. I will acknowledge that Reed will have superior content, but I would ask to go last because I would have an additional element.
Your request has been received and denied. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No, you go last. Although I do have props for mine as well. So, but I'll go second. I will concede my time to you, Paul.
Thank you. I think you'll understand. I should have mentioned it off air, but you'll get it.
With all of the producing that's going on from David Reed over the last couple of weeks, there's no telling what he's pulling here. So we'll see what happens. Follow us on Twitter at Midday180. You can check out the podcast page as well for original content. For instance, The Wire Season 4 review available, 1045thezone.com, Midday180.com. Paul, the Monday Night Football broadcast crew, as we know it, is going to be very different. Tessitore is out, and they're moving on from their crew. And the New York Post has the latest report as of this morning. So here's the idea.
Is this Marchand?
Yes.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, Andrew Marchand is awesome.
He's the best in the country. I think he's better than Deitch because he breaks a lot of news. Deitch is a good analyst.
So the idea, and he did this through a mailbag, he was asked about, is ESPN any closer to naming a Monday night booth? And his reporting here suggests a one-year crew. And I'll get to my theory on why that is. He doesn't specify why it's a one-year crew. But it sounds as though Steve Levy is going to be on play-by-play. And they want Kirk Herbstreit to be the color analyst here. the analyst next to Levy in the booth. The assumption would be, oh, Herbstreit would do that if there is no college football season or if it's delayed to the spring or whatever could happen there. And yes, that's part of it. They want him in the booth for Monday Night Football if college football isn't played. But if it is, Herbstreit is doing the broadcast with Chris Fowler for their primetime game on ABC every Saturday evening. He's on that call. ESPN would like him to do both. And it's up to Herbstreit to decide if he wants to do both. If he doesn't, then they are looking at Brian Griese, Lewis Riddick, or Dan Orlovsky, who joined us recently. So those are their options right now, according to Marchand.
Well, I'm much more familiar with Riddick and Orlovsky, and I like them both. Tell me about Griese, who I hear periodically, but... Strikes me as
experience in the booth. I think he's polished. Is he bringing that star power that they want on Monday Night Football? No, but that gets to my theory here on the 1 year deal. There is light rumblings that ABC is going to make a play for Sunday Night Football in this new TV contract. And if that's the case, then this is just their stopgap before taking either the Monday Night Football contract or taking Monday Night Football to ABC. I think they're going network regardless of if they're on Sunday night or Monday night next year.
Yeah. Well, it's not like ABC is going for it. I mean, it's still Disney going for it. They would just be going for it to put it up. They would be selling the NFL on putting it on ABC instead of putting it on ESPN.
Would be between Disney and NBC.
Right. For Sunday night.
Right.
I would think NBC would go all in to maintain that property, which is maybe the best property in sports, which they've done a great job with. My only complaint with Sunday Night Football is that the football night in America doesn't get to highlights enough. Largely because I think they have to wait till the games are over. It's too much of a preview and not enough of a review, hyping their game of the night. But I think they do a really nice job with that game, and I just don't need to see it go somewhere else.
The NFL likes Herbstreit. Marchand points this out, which tells me...
Well, it's not to like. Who doesn't like Herbstreit?
Well, but... You know, some guys are just branded as college guys, right?
Yes.
He's not. Exactly. He's got the crossover appeal.
Here's the thing, though. I mean, is the guy going to – first off, you know, there's potential you could overextend the guy. Preparing for the two games of the week is a big deal. And, you know, I think it makes a difference for that guy to be with the teams on Friday and Saturday. He's not going to be with the teams on Friday and Saturday. Usually you go to the road team on Friday, visit with them, and then you fly to the city of the game, and you're at the team hotel for production meetings on Saturday before or on Sunday before the Monday night game. That would be out of the question because he'd be at the college game, so he'd be working a lot by phone, or he'd be stopping by one or both cities during the week. I mean, he would be sacrificing a ton of family time. He's got young boys who play a lot of baseball, I know. And so, you know, that's a huge – there's some huge sacrifices.
His other sons are at Clemson.
Plus, you know, there's potential there just to overextend him that he's not quite as good at both. As he would be if he continued to focus on the one and then college game day.
It's a fluid situation here. It's not done.
I'd love to listen to him on the NFL game.
If there is no college football season, if they delay the college football season, if it's pushed to the spring, expect to see Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit calling Monday Night Football. That's my expectation on that. If there is college football, it could be Herbstreit with Steve Levy. It could be Steve Levy with Dan Orlovsky. And we asked Dan Orlovsky what it's like making sure that everyone at Disney and everyone at ESPN, that they know that you're wanting to be in the running for this, and the pressure around just trying to get your foot in the door with Monday Night Football?
I haven't done any type of audition or anything like that. You know, I've got, you know, a couple of years of calling college football games and some pretty intense ones. So, you know, I think that's part of it. Obviously, the coronavirus aspect is changed some things in regards to it and whatnot. And so I haven't done anything. I haven't had any conversations with ESPN people. I just know that I'm part of the conversation and they haven't made their decision yet. And so there's some very, what happens with college football is obviously a part of that. But, you know, I just do my best. What ESPN tells me to go do or asks me to go be a part of, they're going to get my best punch. And so, obviously it's the king of it all. And I feel like I would absolutely crush it, but that's out of my hands for right now. And so we'll kind of see as we get closer to the season what happens.
Our full conversation with Dan Orlovsky, talking everything from Ryan Tannehill to Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, and much more, available online, midday180.com.
I like Levy very much with anybody. I think he'd be pleasing to me. I think Orlovsky would be good at it. I think Riddick would be good at it. Just nobody has the Zoom that they're looking for, and they need to come to terms with that on the star power and settle for good football people.
If they come with an announcement that doesn't include Herb Street, the writing is on the wall. That is a one-year stopgap before they move on to the quote-unquote Monday night crew, whatever they're trying to put together.
Right,
headlines coming up with David Reed. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.